First up today, Nepal, where the death toll from last week's massive earthquake has climbed to over 7,500. A number of recent studies have found that disasters like earthquakes often hit women much harder than men. A 2007 British study found that between 1981 and 2002, natural disasters in 141 countries killed significantly more women than men. The worse the disaster, the bigger the gender disparity, according to the research. Women are particularly vulnerable in earthquakes because in most countries, they're more likely to be indoors. In Aceh, Indonesia, during the 2004 tsunami, up to 4 women died for every man, in part because Indonesian women don't usually learn to swim or climb trees. During and after the 1998 floods in Bangladesh, many women suffered from urinary tract infections due to lack of sanitation and the taboo attached to menstruation. In Nepal, the disparate impact on women is even greater because so many men are working outside the country as migrant laborers. This not only put women more at risk during the immediate disaster, but also means that they'll be disproportionately dealing with the impact of scarce food, poor sanitation, and destroyed social infrastructure over the next years. Dr. Renu Adhikari is an obstetrician and gynecologist who worked in various remote hospitals in Nepal for over a decade. She then founded the Women's Rehabilitation Center, a leading organization addressing violence against women, as well as the National Alliance of Women Human Rights Defenders in Nepal. Dr. Adhikari sits on the advisory boards of several global women's networks and organizations, including Urgent Action Fund in Oakland, and she's been in the Bay Area on a fellowship through Urgent Action Fund. Dr. Adhikari is leaving today to return to Nepal to assist in rebuilding and make sure that women's needs and voices are not ignored. Preeti Shekhar caught up with her after a talk she gave over the weekend.
Welcome to Women's Magazine, Renuji. So let's begin by you sharing, you've been in the U.S. for a month or so on a fellowship, mm-hmm. and this earthquake, this horrifying earthquake happened a little over a week ago, mm-hmm. and now you're going back mm-hmm. to do the relief work, to go back home,
yeah.
without when you don't have a home. So yeah. tell us about what brought you here and what's now taking you back.
Well, actually, I work on the women's rights sector, right? I work on violence against women and sexual violence against women. Professionally, I'm a medical doctor, and I worked kind of for several years as a gynae OBGYN, but since the time when I started my work against trafficking and then violence against women, like, I'm very much into it, right? So then when some woman like me works on violence against women, and especially sexual violence against women, during the conflict, definitely there are a lot of threats, a lot of burnout, and a lot of issues. So somehow, you know, I came here in order to get rid of that, kind of to create a space for myself, to write something, you know, to and then reflect on my work, you know, kind of, and then get a little bit of relaxed as well. So all these things were, and then that was Urgent Action Fund has helped me with a fellowship, you know, to do that work. But I came, unfortunately, I was here only for 2 weeks, then I had to go to Europe to do some work, and then the day when I was back, earthquake happened, right? And kind of being far from the country, a person like me who coordinates 7 safe houses for women survivor of violence, different kind of violence all over the country, and who coordinates National Alliance of Women Human Rights Defenders.
Tell us a little bit about that, that network.
This is National Alliance of Women Human Rights Defenders is a network of very, very, what you say, that fluid. No, it's not very structured, but it's a network of women human rights defenders, women rights activists, let's say, that who are active in different areas, right? So this National Alliance of Women Human Rights Defenders represent 21 women's movement.
Right? In Nepal.
In Nepal, 21 women's movement, like women's for housing rights, women's lesbian women, you know, kind of women for Dalit, right of Dalit women, women for Madhesi women, indigenous women, and women with disability. So different, like different women's movement came together and then this coordinates, right? Beside that, this is kind of, this is a network of women active at the district level, you know? on various issues. No, that can be on the political issue, that can be on the economical issue, or that can be on women's issues. So women's human rights should not be kind of reduced up to the violence against women only, right? So what we say that, okay, kind of any kind of discrimination is violence against women, right? So this is a network of women who are working at the grassroots. They might not be literate, they might not be rich, they might not represent certain class, but they are the one who are at the grassroots working for women's rights. You know, they are vocal, loud, you know. So this is kind of, and then this is kind of national network is what you say that, okay, come this culmination of all these women. And this is all over throughout the country in all 75 districts. So that's why, you know, and when earthquake happened in the area which was highest hit, first thing I started getting information that several women human rights defenders, they lost their houses, they lost their relative, right? A couple of them, women human rights defenders are also missing, and we don't know, you know, what news we will get. So it was some kind of, it's a very painful, right? And then my office also got, one office totally got demolished. You know, I don't care about my both houses. You know, I don't have both houses gone. But still, you know, for me, my office, one office got badly damaged. Hostel got damaged, I mean demolished. And then, and the most important thing, Preeti, it was like when I called my offices, especially safe houses and survivors, you know, they were not saying anything, but they were crying and they said that when you will come. You know, that really made me. I said that, okay, no, I cannot. You know, I have father who is 84 years and then he's cardiac and he's on oxygen.
They're all okay.
Yeah. They physically, but see, for me, like, okay, that is also very important. But these survivors, you know, who are rape survivors, survivor of different rights, little children, and they are saying that, Didi, when are you coming? So I said that, you know, I cannot be here, you know. Kind of WHRD network demands my leadership, demands me to be there, you know, in a difficulty personally, right?
There's been so much news, so much in social media that we've been hearing about. Everybody's asking, how can we help? How can we help? And there's, of course, anytime a disaster of this scale happens, there's an outpouring of money and resources. And all of it, it takes a while to reach the people who need it.
Yeah.
And you spoke about that today at this discussion. Can you tell our listeners how all of us know about what's happening right now? You know, Nepal is in the news. So, but how can listeners help and talk about long-term relief and rebuilding, that where that's where we need support in the long run?
You know, like as you already said, you know, so I don't want to repeat that one, that a lot of resources are being poured there, right? So money is there. For the relief work, money is there. And in spite of having money, what I will say, what I'm getting, the information what I have, in spite of having a lot of money, maybe relief operation, what it had to be, that has not taken place. It's still in areas, not remote areas, things are still not addressed, not reached. Even Nuwakot, one district, which is only 72 kilometers far from Kathmandu, there is one village, 12,000 around household, totally wiped out. And then till yesterday, there was not even a single tent. All they are under sun and then rain, because it's raining also, right? So there is need of proper coordination. There is need of proper support and from the government. Government has to be strong, right? And we, civil society also, we have the duty to support, you know, kind of. When in any kind of this kind of relief, I mean, disaster and then relief operation, rescue operation, need of women gets left out, right? And me as a woman human rights defender, as an activist, that matters a lot. Because we, physiologically, right, we know that, okay, even when the whole kind of, it was shaking, but women were giving birth, the babies. You know, babies will not say that, okay, this earthquake, I will not come out, right? And they bleed, you know, and then kind of every month, kind of there is menstruation, and then they need sanitary napkins, you know, they need underwears, you know, they need to change, and for the hygiene, and then for the physical need also. And with the small baby, they need to breastfeed, and if they don't eat, their breast milk will not come. And elderly women with disabilities, so they all have a special need, right? I think that this part has not been that seriously looked into, you know. I think, and I can fear, I'm not accusing or blaming, you know. So I can understand, because for the first time it's kind of how to kind of create support, you know, how to kind of create some kind of shelter, some food, and then these things comes in. But as a woman rights activist, what I say that these both things should go together, right? That's why what I think that, okay, if whole world, you know, with the listeners, you know, anyone wants to support, then maybe this is time to look at in these special areas, right? Because for the rescue and relief, already things are there, right? So kind of this is special area, how to meet the need of a special group, special care, like, and ask, like, any international rescue operation, you know, kind of create, beside the any camp, there should be one small women's safe space where at least women can go change and feed their babies or whatever they want to do, right? So kind of this kind of women's safe space are very much required. And definitely, like, another, like, what I think that, okay, this is one area we need to learn from Haiti, from all over the world, you know, kind of in disaster situation, like, there is a lot of community support mechanism. Community support is happening. So for the international community also, kind of somehow, when international community supports, you know, it has to be very much mindful to empower and support community group. You know, yeah, international organization definitely needs support for the relief. That also needs to be supported. But at the same time, to make sure that, okay, community groups are not overlooked. You know, community group are not pushed back, you know, because they are the one who are taking lead, you know, to and they are the one who are going to be there for longer, right? So and this will help even international agencies, relief agencies also to do kind of to make sure that things get spent in a proper way, and then there is some kind of follow-up mechanism has been created, right? So without that, I don't think that we can rebuild Nepal. Nepal needs to be rebuilt now, you know. So we lost everything. It's kind of a massive disaster. So in order to rebuilding phase, I think, like, okay, we need to, international community also need to learn the lesson from outside, and then, yeah, we have to be mindful and careful.
Absolutely. And disaster after disaster, we know that there's a gendered reality of the of how women are disproportionately affected. And even even in Nepal, I read this news report, an analysis that said that about 53% of the people affected are women. And
In Nepal, you know, Priti, because in Nepal, women are majority of population living in Nepal. Because a lot of youth have gone as a migrant workers. Like, they are not in the country. So definitely when disaster takes place, then in Nepal it's very clear that, okay, majority of persons who are affected, women and elderly people, you know, because youths are out and big number. According to the government data, 1,500 to 2,000 young people are migrating every day.
From Nepal. To where?
To Middle East, mostly. Middle East and Malaysia, to Gulf and then Malaysia, right? So it's a huge number, right? And definitely when this kind of big number of people are out, then we have women-headed households, right? And then that has been continued since our kind of 12-year of violent political conflict we had. Violent political conflict has created a lot of trauma, a lot of kind of created demography of our communities. And now that can be very clearly reflected, you know? And another thing what I am very much afraid of now, like, if we don't care and if we don't plan properly from the beginning for the gender-sensitive relief and support, it's going to have a lot of kind of domestic violence is going to be increased. Sexual violence will be increased, you know. So those things, I think that these are some of the areas where we have to be very mindful of.
Yeah. The other issue that Nepal is in the news often internationally is trafficking, and that's an issue you work on, both labor as well as sex trafficking. Can you speak to that and how you, as somebody who's worked on this issue for many years, see that impacting the current scenario, and what we should and can do to kind of address it?
Yeah, one thing, like, see, I'm working against trafficking for the last 23 years, right? So, and then I have seen things changing, dynamics changing, magnitude changing, and then even faces are changing. At this moment, we might not see that a lot of young women being deceived, coerced, or duped and then taken to Indian brothels. But now adult women, educated, they are going as a workers to the Middle East under the recruitment agencies.
As domestic workers.
Right, as a domestic workers. Not only domestic workers, they are going in other sector, like entertainers also in certain areas, like but majority domestic workers. And they are ending up in a trafficking-like situation. And I'm sure that is going to increase. Yeah, because I have seen that we had Kosi flood, big disaster, and that after that also trafficking somehow increased because people need money, you know, to rebuild. And then if work is not available in the country, then they have to go out. So another thing what I really want to kind of know the listeners and then plea also from my side, saying that it's necessary of the international community and national communities and everyone to talk about kind of somehow to start kind of building the opinion, saying that okay, Nepal government has to make a reconstruction plan in such a way that all workers are Nepali. You know, we need to bring our construction
bring
workers.
Jobs to make to
so
stabilize.
We need to bring out our mm-hmm. See, Qatar is being built by Nepali workers, right? And so 2020 World Cup, you know, kind of a lot of issues. All Nepali workers are working as a construction worker. They should come and they start building, and then they should get paid properly as they are being paid in Qatar, right? You know? So and being abused, right? So these are some of the things I think that we need to think.
And the other important point that you made was to hold the government accountable.
Definitely,
like you said.
Yeah.
You yourself are going back to use your influence, your leadership. Yeah. And I think that's very important. And I think also listeners, like you said, can be a part of that process.
Definitely, like it's a taxpayers. What I'm saying that, okay, I'm in US, you know, kind of, then I will talk about USAID because USAID is one of our biggest donors. And USAID money is taxpayers' money. So every taxpayer has to ask that how reconstruction work is taking place, where the money is going, you know, how rescue operation is taking place. It's a kind of, if citizen, American citizen starts holding accountable of their constituent, congressman or woman, and they to the USAID, and then USAID, it's like kind of, I'm not saying that pressurize, I'm saying that making accountable, right? Because I don't want my country to get all the time influenced by international community. You know, kind of our country, we are sovereign country. So we have right to build and plan ourselves. But at the same time, to all the time to make them cautious, kind of not to, what you say, that inflate corruption that is already there. You know, and take care of those things.
And we have to wrap up. And my last question is, you know, it's a lot of despair and grief that's going on, but it's also a time of opportunity.
Definitely.
And can you speak to that and how you think that we can all, you know, how Nepal can possibly use this as an opportunity to heal and recover?
Yeah, there is no question that a lot of griefs are there, right? So, and then we are going through a difficult period. But what I see that, you know, we had problem with the constitution blockade. No, we haven't had the constitution, and a lot of issue of ethnic identity, and you know who comes where. So all this conflict were there. But now after the earthquake, you know, kind of what I see on the ground, that is not there. Everybody is helping everyone. So maybe this would be taken as an opportunity to understand that when disaster comes, we all are together. And if we will not have constitution, that will be another disaster for the country, you know, and then build country on based on that. And beside that, like there were a lot of places, areas, you know, which needed kind of some kind of maintenance, support and other things. Now it's time to rebuild, right? And then we have done a lot of mistakes on the way how houses in Kathmandu was constructed. It was like a jungle, concrete jungle, right? So now maybe this kind of this opportunity needs to be taken and then say that people need space in between houses, you know, kind of and sustainable type of housing are need of the day. So all these things, if we can put in together, and then especially, you know, we need to build healthcare system because that is the need of today. So if we really build healthcare system in a sustainable way, I think that can create opportunity, tremendous opportunities as well, to bring all the leaders, to bring all the community, and then to create infrastructure, I think.
Yes, to rebuild infrastructure and to consider public health, which is going to be the next big crisis.
Yeah.
So thank you to you and the activists, women activists, especially on the ground, who are doing this important work, and more power to you, and hope we can be in touch to see how we can continue being a part of the long-term rebuilding process, not just the immediate right here and now, right?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
Preeti Shekhar spoke with Dr. Renu Adhikari, a Nepali physician and the founder of the Women's Rehabilitation Center and co-founder and chair of the National Alliance of Women Human Rights Defenders in Nepal. We have put a list of women's organizations raising money for grassroots reconstruction efforts in Nepal on our website. That's kpfa.org/programs/women's-magazine.